Hello, everybody. I would like to introduce a talk today about technological art off the trodden tracks. It's about artists misusing technology, and I honestly don't have any clue what it's about, but I'm very curious to see. May I introduce to you Jussi, Angus Leber, and Regine de Batty?
Good evening. Guten Abend. So I'm Regine de Batty, and I've worked in media. I've done lots of stuff in the past, but now I'm just a blogger. And my blog is called We Make Money, Not Art. Yeah, I started it 1 year and a half ago. And it talks about what artists are doing with technology and also design and other stuff, but mainly artists and technology.
Yes, hello from my part as well. I'm Jussi Angesleva, as already kind of noted. I'm living in Berlin, teaching at the university here digital media and working also at the same time doing media arts related things. And I guess to kind of frame a little bit of the talk for tonight, kind of a word for why we are here in the first place, but we are basically here because Tim asked us to. The reason, the rationale behind why he did so, I don't know, but maybe the kind of combination of Regine more kind of being very much aware of what is really going on in the field of media arts, and me slightly being more involved maybe in doing small projects myself in the field, that we might be able to complement each other on the talk, but we haven't talked this through yet, so we'll see what happens. So maybe I'll let you start.
Yeah, well, maybe another reason why we are here talking about artists is that there are many common points between hackers and digital artists. And yesterday I went to the introduction talk of Tim Pritlove, and he gave a kind of definition and non-definition of hackers. And I saw that many of the points he mentioned could be totally applied to new media artists. So I wrote my notes, and he said that hackers are not criminal, that hacking is about freedom, understanding the world outside, and this world is filled with technology, more and more filled with technology, and if you want to understand the world, you have to understand this technology. He said that hackers are people who like to go into the things, and they don't want to be ignored, they have a voice. They are concerned about how the world is working, and they would like to see it working in a better way. And we can really apply all these sentences to artists. So there are many things in common between them, and so many things that I think that a hacker meeting new media artists, they could have a conversation, they could really talk. But if you have a new media artist meeting a contemporary artist, someone who's painting or making sculpture, it's not, maybe they wouldn't have so much thing in common and so much point to discuss. But so sometimes the boundaries are blurred between hacking and making digital art, but hackers and artists do not only have things in common, they also have differences.
Yeah, I mean, of course, and still have to say that we are now very much simplifying the equation, kind of coming up with some sort of stereotypes through which we then discuss a couple of projects later on. So here we have how hackers are related to media artists. What Regina already said, I think I wrote this list separately from her, but I think there's a quite strong correlation. Now, in terms of what we felt that where the correlations are not so strong is basically in the methodologies of how to do things, and also in terms of what to do with them. Kind of as a one-liner, one could say that media arts in general is very often about providing a vision, you know, doing something that has some physical manifestation through whatever technological means that illustrates a point. It doesn't really work that well, and it's not replicable in a way that many hacker style projects would be, in terms of from ground up building up the community, coming up with the the kind of whole space of possibilities what a given technology, a new idea could be applied to, reverse engineering things, coming up with new software libraries, etc. So all these things are, so the perspective is much more, in a way, narrow in terms of having kind of more people working on the same thing, but at the same time, trying to just get the idea across that hopefully other people will then understand. So that's in a way my kind of extremely narrow perspective on what the differences might be. Did I miss something thus far?
Should we start with examples?
Yep, I think the examples come here.
Yeah, to make it clear,
yeah.
We'll just show a few examples, and we're not going to show everything that new media artists are doing with technology, but as the theme of the Congress is private investigations, we will just show several projects that explain how new media artists are dealing with surveillance technology. And with two themes in particular, I noticed in the program that we are talking here a lot about RFID and CCTV cameras, so we choose several projects that deals with these technologies in particular. That's normal. Okay, so this is the audio pad. So I will just start with a few projects that talk about RFID or artists are using RFID. Of course, many artists are criticizing RFID and organizing workshops where they explain people who want to, who are not hackers, who are not artists, and who are not technicians. They are explaining the bad size of RFID. Also, they are showing them how to easily and cheaply make like a key holder that will light when there's an RFID reader in the neighborhood. One of them is quite famous for this workshop. It's called Zapt, and they're Americans. And sometimes they do things that really, they're quite striking. Like a few months ago, they were in Houston. They were part of a big exhibition. And so they were showing some video. But for the opening of the show, they were trying to demonstrate the nasty side of RFID, and they thought that the better way to do it, not just showing their video, but it was coming at the opening of the show with a series of small boxes, and inside each box there was a cockroach, the one from Madagascar, they are quite big, and they attached an RFID tag to each cockroach, and they invited the people at the opening party to take a box with them and go to their local Walmart supermarket and just free the cockroach in the supermarket so that it would taint the database of the supermarket. But yeah, there are several projects like that. And also we wanted to show that some artists also see the good side of RFID, because RFID is just a technology, and in itself it's not bad, it's not nasty. So the first project is an audio pad, and it's a musical table. And underneath the table, there are RFID readers. And so you just take small tokens, and you move them on the table, and they are associated with sounds, and the movement you make triggers some sounds, so you can use it as a musical instrument. This one is by some German artist. There's a series of bootleg, they call it bootleg projects. And their point is that we love gadgets and we love shiny devices. And each time there's a new model, we just throw away the old one. But some of the old ones are still working perfectly, and they look very, very nice. And so they had this record player. And they just remove what was inside, and instead they put an RFID reader inside. So you just have the shape of a record player, but the technology is totally different. And each time, if you want to listen to some music, you take this old record sleeve, and there's an RFID tag attached to it, and you just put the sleeve on the record player, and the music will go.
I guess there the kind of underlying question is more to do with the sort of inbuilt sort of redundance of modern technology, so that they don't really, I mean, where's the Rolex of mobile phones? I mean, where's the thing that you would like to actually keep for 20, 30 years and that you still appreciate it as a form and you might kind of cherish and change it? You use it for half a year, 2 years, and then you throw it away and get a nicer, newer model. That it's not about how it's like how it feels, but what it does.
Yeah, it's a simple, a bit quirky project. It's called Junky Little Helper. It's a medicine cabinet, and inside there are the bottles or the drugs, and they're associated with an RFID tag. And each time the person, and also the cabinet is networked with a chat room, each time the person is taking a bottle or some medicine, the people on the chat room are informed, and also the cabinet start blinking, and the people can phone the junkie and tell him, look, you're not supposed to take a drug again.
So basically by making the community aware of the fact of the moment the person is basically abusing drugs.
Yeah, this one I found funny. This guy is an interaction designer, and he's also a VJ. And he thought it would be nice if a VJ, instead of being on his side of the nightclub behind his platform, if he could come and dance among the crowd. So there's a glove there at the bottom. There's an RFID reader, and he put RFID tags and different parts of the body on different parts of the body. And like there, it would be reward. If it's on the arm, it could be switched to the next image and stuff like that. It's on. So what happened is that he's dancing among people and he's just doing this when this controls the images, the videos on the screen in the nightclub. Yeah, without music, it's a bit ridiculous. But with the music, it's worse, believe me.
Oh, what do we have next? Yeah.
But yeah, so all these projects thus far, they're more or less kind of neutral uses of RFID. I mean, they definitely have their own quirky undertone, but they're not really questioning the fact that we are being tracked by them by doing shopping in a grocery store.
Okay, so next one. Mm-hmm. This one is called Peripheral Needs. And it's for people with obsessive-compulsive disorders. Like, there are people who just get stressed and get cold sweat if they are in the bus or in the train on their way to work, and they suddenly think, oh, did I switch off the light and the oven? And then they get cold sweat and they have to go back home to check if the electrical appliances are okay. So this system is that you have RFID on Velcro, and they are placed next to the electrical appliance on the toaster or next to the oven. And so you take the Velcro, and on the Velcro it's written toaster or oven, and as you take it off, it just disempowers the electrical appliance, and you have a special bag, and you just put it on your bag. And so if you have problem and get nervous on the bus, you can just look at your back and see, so light, okay, oven, okay. And there's also a pillow, so if you have the problem in the night and you wake up because you're not sure that you have turned off the light, you can just look at your pillow and check. Yeah, now, what we noticed with RFID is that we had projects which were criticizing the technology, projects which were not neutral, projects which used RFID in a way to enhance the life of people. We had much more problems finding projects which would say, oh, CCTV cameras are great and surveillance must be increased. So we only have a series of projects which show surveillance in a dark light. This game is a game about airport insecurity. It's for mobile phone. It's been released in November, I think. And it's totally based on the rules of airport security since 2002. So it's best played while you are queuing before being screened at the airport. So you encounter people from the security. They are self-important. They are not nice. But every 3 miles, there's a corporate coffee machine to help you support the long wait at the airport. And also, it questions the fact that we are told that we have to increase this technology of surveillance, that we have to give up rights, and because it's for our security, it's against terrorism, but these security procedures at airport are not 100% efficient anyway. Then there's a series of projects which criticize the homeland security threat level. It's a system in the US which give colors according to today. It's a very dangerous day. There's a high level of threat, a high level of possibility to be attacked by terrorists. So you check it. You can check it every day to get even more nervous. I don't know. And so some artists have decided to work on that. Like this one, he has made a vest. So this vest can keep you warm in case of a terrorist attack. But it's also networked. So if you are in a Wi-Fi environment, the level of threat on the jacket will be lighted. And there are others like that. There's also a blanket which will get warmer if the threat is higher, because it will comfort you more. Also, Jonah Brucker-Cohen made something, I think, very interesting. This homeland security system is made internally and probably a bit arbitrarily. And he made a homeland insecurity advisory system, which instead of warning people about the threat by terrorists, warn people about the threat posed by the US government itself. This is a project I really like. It's the Insecurity Camera. It's a high-tech video surveillance camera. It has artificial intelligence algorithm, quite advanced computer vision system, and it can zoom and track people that come in its field of view. But this particular camera, it's a bit insecure. It's a bit shy. It doesn't like to watch if people are watching and raising their eyes towards the is there a video? Okay, there's a video. Towards the camera will turn away. Also, it's frightened when there's a sudden noise. Is it okay? Am I not talking too
much? It's very good.
So it's totally a kind of reversal of the habitual situation, and there's a kind of relationship between the surveillance camera and the people passing, and yeah, I feel quite sorry for the camera. You said an anecdote. This one is a kit. And with the kit, you have a mobile phone jammer and also a tape. And on the tape, it's a yellow. Maybe there's a better picture here. No, there's not a better picture. Yes, it's yellow and black, like on crime scenes, and you put it on the place you have selected, and you put the mobile phone jammer, and there's no signal of mobile phone, but you see as a more interesting anecdote.
Tangent from that. Well, I mean, I guess Pedro Sepulveda, who's worked on this project, whose project it is. He's looking in general at the kind of digital technologies, aesthetics, how they can affect architecture. He's an architect by training. And this is, in a way, is one example of that. Say, I mean, in today's world, any electronic networks, wireless networks, etc., are always kind of built on top of the existing architecture. So he's kind of questioning or looking at how those things might actually begin to manifest themselves in the reality if they were designed from ground up. So this is kind of very hacker way of doing this, just having the masking tape that then relates to the nearby mobile phone jammer. Of course, it's not in the right dimension or proportion, but using this as an indicator of the area. Now, this again is very much, you can see this is a kind of a comment on the fact that there's all this invisible, in this case, electromagnetic radiation that is without our permission, infiltrating everywhere. And that is, I mean, as Regine was saying earlier on, this is exactly most of the projects that have this kind of a tone. And another project that Pedro did before was looking at ways people could avoid being in front of a CCTV camera when moving around in a public space. He did a good number of studies and talked with people, interviewed them about how they feel about being in CCTV cameras. And in a way, the statement of by providing different ways of like war-charking style, but the CCTV fields of view, etc. There's different projects that do lots of that kind of stuff. The statement normally there is that you should have the freedom to choose not to be in the camera. But the area where he did conduct his studies was in Hackney, in London. Most of the people he talked with were very happy with the fact that there were CCTV cameras looking at them. Of course, then for them it was more like this line would tell them, yes, I can be in the beam versus I can be out of the beam. So this is kind of very kind of ambivalent, or this kind of two-sided equation normally with this kind of security camera or security technology related projects. I think the next project would be exactly about that.
Yeah, so the next project is a bit similar to what UC has been just explained. It's called IC, and it just maps the localization of the CCTV cameras. So let's say you don't like to be on this camera, and you go from point A to point B. You go on the website of IC, and it will show you the best way, which is not the straighter way, where you can reach point B without being as less as possible in the field of CCTV camera. And they made also a version for PDA from when you're not home. This is a project I really like. It's called Troya, for Temporary Residency of Intelligent Agent. It's a mobile and really huge stage. And inside they show interaction projects, whatever. And they go from city to city. But what's interesting is that they have performance people, people who are undercover and who are intelligent agents. And their mission is to stay undercover. They cannot be detected as actors, but they have to trigger conversation, to mingle with the crowd, to talk with people, and to infuse ideas and opinions about surveillance, and how in Europe more and more surveillance control, this technology of control, are taking ground in Europe, and really trying to talk with people and have conversation with them, and the hope is that once the stage is going to another city, people will remind this conversation. They will go home and talk about it, maybe with their family. And I think it's quite a clever way to to let people know about it and to raise the awareness. Yeah, many projects. Swan is Life's user manual, and it's a woman. It's Michelle Terrand, and she walks in the street. She's dressed as a homeless person, and she's got a cart, and there are rugs on the cart and discarded objects. But underneath, she's got a mobile computer system that just snatches the surveillance camera broadcast and show them on TV screen, which are on the side of the cart, so everybody can see exactly what these surveillance cameras are shooting. This one is called a random search, and it's just a garment with pressure sensors, and it's just a concept product. It works, but she's not selling it, of course. Yeah, it's when you go to airport or to concert or sport events, you are searched and security personnel are touching you. And here, each time someone is touching you for security reason, with the metal detector, it triggers some lights, so you can share with the people around you what you are intimately nearly experiencing during the search. So it makes it even more visible. Yeah, this one is okay. That's a funny one. It's the corporate fallout detector, and it's something. It's not too heavy, but you can take it to the supermarket, and it scans barcodes, and according to the there's a huge database behind it, of course, and according to the ethic and the respect to the. That the manufacturer of the product has for the environment, it will make more and more noise. So if you buy a can of beans and the manufacturer doesn't have a good behavior, doesn't respect environment, and doesn't have very good ethics, it will make really a lot of noise.
As most of you probably have one of those original devices at home, you notice them notice the repurposed Geiger meter as the source.
Yeah, it kind of highlights the notion of danger. This is a headscarf. It's called tikka. The design is inspired by what Muslims are wearing. And so it's a way to draw attention to the fact that after 2001, there were a systematical, they were checking, systematical profiling of Arab citizens or Arab-looking citizens. So there's something here on the shoulder, on the left shoulder, and if you press the button, it will show a beam of light, and the surveillance camera won't detect your face exactly, we'll just see a beam of light. And also the clothes is reflective to protect your face again. And it's quite, on the one hand, it just asks for increased surveillance because the person who wears it just screams, oh, she's someone from Islam because she's got that headscarf. And on the other hand, it protects you. So it just highlights the discrimination. Okay, your turn.
Okay, very good. So now we go about faking it. So in the beginning you were saying about the way media artists have often a way of trying to get their point across with whatever means possible. Sometimes it results in fully functional things, other times it doesn't. And in a way, my question perhaps to you today is very much about, so which way is the more appropriate? Is it okay to fake things? And if so, how should you do it the best way? So I'll show you four projects that kind of relate to the subject. So the first one is a project by Georg Tremmel and Chiho Fukuhara called Biopresence. The idea is very simple. Most of our DNA, or most of the DNA in most of living things, is junk. And their question was that, what could you do with, if it's junk, you can throw it away, what can you put there instead? And their result was this living kind of a memorial, a living monument, like living tombstone sort of a thing. So taking the active parts of your loved one's DNA and implanting into a junk DNA part of a tree. And then you plant it somewhere in the graveyard, wherever you want to plant it. So it completely changes the perception, even though functionally it doesn't do anything about them. So this is completely a concept. So what they did about the project was that they went to talk with a number of different scientists about the feasibility in the first place and what they would need to go about doing it. And the response was resounding yes, that there's no problem in principle about doing this. Of course, it would need some good backing to get it commercially done or like get it done in the first place. And with this information in the background, what they did to present the work, to craft the work, was that they wrote a press release describing the project and sent it to many newspapers in UK. And as a result, they got a huge, completely controversial or like bipolar response, people who wanted to kill them and people who wanted to be stored once they were killed or dead through their means. And this whole discourse, for me in the beginning, I felt that it was really, you know, like a cheat or kind of a cop-out of a project. I mean, this one-liner, an idea, they didn't do anything about it. They just talked to some people and then presented some clippings and, you know, newspaper clippings and people's letters about them. But in terms of what they wanted to do with the project, by proposing this idea and making people question about that side of biotech, I think it, in retrospect, was hugely successful. Can't think of any better way of doing it. The next project, this is from maybe 2002 by Jimmy Loiseau and James Auger, called Audio Tooth, basically a Bluetooth audio implant in your tooth, using bone conductance to make the sound audible, and then having a microphone so that that it would also broadcast the signal. So I mean, Bluetooth tooth. So what they did, this is all they did. Again, I mean, for me, I was very critical when I saw this first time. I mean, nice idea. Okay, so what's coming out of it? So they did this huge tooth. I mean, it's about this big. And put some any old microcontroller, single board, I don't even know what it's in there, and cast the whole thing in resin. Looks great, and is great tool for talking. Then they also did their research and talked to lots of people about the feasibility of if this would be possible to do. And again, the response was resounding yes, that given a couple of years, miniaturization, all that, yes, it would be possible to do. And again, they got equally controversial or kind of bipolar response from the audience, saying how this kind of what do you call it when technology gets implanted in human body? Cyborg. Yes, thanks very much. This kind of cyborg discourse in the first place, and then people who just felt it'd be a very useful thing to have. Then another project, this one is from the University of Arts, where I'm teaching, a project called Parasite. The idea was looking at trains as interfaces. And what the guys did, they made this little kit that you could plug on the side of the train, and it would project parallel worlds into the by-flying buildings. Basically, using camera tracking to match the speed, and people looking out through the window, they would see these parallel worlds being kind of whizzing by. So what they did was that they did a fully functional demo, but from within the train, so having a normal projector and a laptop in their lap and projecting through the window, and then made a beautiful looking case with the right kind of fittings that you could actually mount in the wall. And these two things were separate. They were presented as one thing, and they again got very, very nice response for the project. There's the kind of, so for me, there's the kind of, the question there is that in order to make impact, you have to be standing behind the idea. You have to be very strong about it and kind of visionary. But at the same time, when this becomes lying, when this becomes like too much, that people then are like, I want to have this in my so-and-so next thing, and where can I buy it? And then if you say that, well, you know, it's not really working, then what happens? I mean, this has happened to me also a couple of times, and it's always a kind of interesting experience for how to deal with those situations. Yes, then the next project is kind of a combination of many things. This is a project that I did back in the day together with Markus Kirsch, started in London at the Royal College working on this thing as a result of a brief looking at wearable technology. So we extended wearable technology to both extremes, the implant-like things and then the easy removable like wristbands and clothes, etc. And then tried to find something in between. Ended up looking at edible technology, tried to feed things to people. Nobody wanted to eat them, therefore decided to feed them to pigeons. At the same time, what was happening in UK, this was kind of this whole Data Protection Act thing going about, where it became legally binding for companies having public space CCTV cameras to provide the material of those, if they're recorded, to provide the material to those who would request, who would have been in the pictures themselves. So if you're standing in front of the CCTV camera, you could go to the company the next day and say, hey, I was there between 5 and 7. Could I please have the videotape where I was standing there? And they would be legally bound to actually providing you with, I mean, but then you would have to pay some money for the processing. But in principle, it became legal. So we're looking at this whole development and did some bit of kind of leap of faith there and proposed a combination of these two things. Both of us were living in London at the time, not knowing the city, and were interested in kind of browsing around in the unknown areas. And ended up proposing this project called Urban Eyes, where we would feed pigeons with RFID transponders. And the CCTV cameras in the public space, if people started requesting the material, maybe one day they would be networked. Maybe the streams could be then tapped and automated. And then maybe some people would also install some RFID readers to those cameras, and then, you know, that when the birds would fly by, you would capture those images and they would be sent to you. Of course not. This was an idea. It was it was just combining these various different things into this one big scenario, looking at giving a bird's eye perspective to a passerby who would then lead you through the city into unknown situations and kind of unexpected corners through camera visions that weren't meant for the public consumption. So then, okay, so this was the big idea, never meant to be done. And then we got some little funding to actually make it. So we had to start chopping off the edges of our big vision, the vision that we knew that wouldn't really happen, even though we were kind of standing behind it. So what we then did is this little bird feeding station. It's a little platform with the RFID reader inside. And then we manually searched through different web streams in the area. This is in Rotterdam, in Holland. That we would then manually connect to be sent through this device to people with mobile phones close by when birds with RFID chips on their legs instead of feeding them would land on that thing. So, okay, this is an extremely condensed description of the project, but basically we started chopping the edges off from all sides and making it smaller and smaller in order for us to be able to make it. At the same time, it still, for me, kind of maintains kind of the essence, but is it really the same project, I would like to ask you. So, whether it was better to fake it or to make it, in this case, where the concept was at the level that it wasn't really feasible in the first place. Right. So, I guess it's time to kind of wrap things up and look at what we've kind of gone through here. This is a bit of a tangent to the wrapping up of things. We're just maybe half an hour ago, about so, we were talking about other kind of new tendency in the media arts that we felt very similar to the kind of community spirit in the hacker scene, which was this kind of sharing of ideas and organizing smaller scale workshops and building these communities around things. So here we have different hacking workshops, little electronics for designers and artists, just as inspiration for how to go about coming up with new ideas with tools that you don't really know that well about.
But something about what maybe the artist could bring to
us. So the kind of question, on one hand, the question that I just laid at you was that which way for the media arts is better to work, whether it's about doing scenarios or doing real things. The other question for us is to then, this being the case, how would you feel about, how would you see the role of media arts in the kind of work you're doing? What is the value added of this kind of quirky projects that may look nice and work and provide some kind of inspiration, a new way of thinking about things to your domain? And one kind of way that we were thinking about it would be to say that, well, as I was showing those quirky fake projects, they got lots of exposures to people who didn't really look for this stuff. So the way I feel about the hacker community is that once you want to know, there's lots of people working on the area who want to share ideas, and who, once you put yourself into the situation, it's really, really, you can learn a lot and you can give a lot. At the same time, people who don't know about things, who are kind of outside, who you might want to draw into the equation, what I feel about many of these kind of media arty projects are that they catch people's inspiration and the kind of excitement through tangible examples that they can deal with and understand without understanding the technology much easier. Therefore, trying to find a way where these two things could exist in balance or support each other could be maybe an interesting new tangent.
Okay.
No?
Yeah.
Very good. So, yeah. I guess we leave it for the questions.
Hi. I have a question. First of all, thank you for the really good examples of media art and its application. I think a place like this really needs that type of exposure for the people, because most of us are programmers, hackers. We don't really know what's going on in the media arts field. I agree with a lot of what you're saying, both of you are saying, but I think you're really missing the point and the punctum, and you're kind of missing the mark at why you're showing this to the people here in particular. And I think the thing that makes media artists, computer artists, and hackers one community is the fact that, quite frankly, both groups like to fuck around, pardon my French. The whole point is that both groups are remediating. They're pushing the boundaries of what we perceive technology to be. And I think that's more important than saying that these people are playing around with media arts. It's actually, we are at the forefront, at the cutting edge of what we can do with technology. And both this is what's synonymous in both groups. And I think that's really what you're missing.
Now, we... We were meaning to communicate it, and we didn't communicate it well. We just, that's what we meant to say. So thank you.
Thanks for the articulation.
Yeah, thanks for the articulation.
Actually, I have a couple of points. I hope I don't forget them. My point was kind of similar, because I wouldn't have said that you didn't get this across. I think you got it across very, very well, that... I don't think the question is, are artists allowed to lie? I think lying is very well means to an end sometimes, and this is good for this is true for the artist as well as the hacker. And so, to answer your question from my position, of course it is okay to lie and to fake it, On the other hand, what kind of struck me was that the being an artist allows you to have a freedom in designing your things that you don't have when you're working for money. Because what you showed tonight was were many things that were like they were like products. What these artists are basically product designers, but they are much more free in what they create because they are not restricted by what is practically doable today. So I think this also counts to the point that of course it's okay to lie. Mm-mm.
Absolutely, and this was what I was saying in the beginning, the idea that how I feel about the media artist role in providing a vision and kind of sort of a scaffolding that shows the way without solving all the problems yet. That it would be kind of way of seeing the world rather than the manual how to get there.
Well, since you were asking for an answer,
I was waiting
for your question.
Hello. Hey.
So.
Please.
Okay. So I think.
Oh, just before I'll try to be short as possible. Thanks. I will add quite similar thing like you with your great French mentioned, is that it's great to see the aesthetization of the really important and political issues. It's quite great to see the how people deal with that at the symbolical level. But I would just like to add that the great opportunity is in playing with the identity of artist, where if you just pick it up, if you articulate something as an art piece, has much more freedom for you, and there is some big protection where you can fight for quite serious political issues. And I think that hackers in that sense are very sensitive about that, and they are in the fight for quite serious political issues. And what I propose in that sense is to go through that as an artist, not just saying I'm an artist. There is really big a need to actually to have hackers then with historians of art or whatever, whoever is good in theory, to make it more than just banal reference. But I think that that's the way how some really serious issues could be addressed. Thanks.
Right. To stand behind what you're saying, I guess.
And I just wanted to say, if you build it, and after you've built it, you still have to explain it, then you shouldn't have built it in the first place but left it with the explanation. And unfortunately, I think my observation is that for most of media art, as far as I've seen it so far, these explanations are, if not necessary, at least they are provided. So,
yes.
And so therefore, I think most of media art should have just be left conceptual.
Yes,
that's a view.
Yeah. I guess I could refer to, I mean, this was a impromptu experiment that, last time in Heidelberg in the talk, somebody was asking a little bit of the similar thing about the definition of media art or something related, and then I coined a quick test to look at the utility of something like that, and it was to say that you take the inputs out, replace them with random, and then if it still feels the same, then you might be off the mark.
Hello. So something on that also. Just the one thing you showed that didn't really ring true in that respect was the woman with the Muslim style thing. In that, like, I can understand the context. I know what airport security is like. I know what the current situation is in the world. Yet I didn't understand it looking at it, and I didn't even understand it until kind of you explained. You know, it's a contradiction between wanting, you know, attracting attention and rejecting it. It wasn't immediately obvious. I mean, I think that kind of fails in that way. But yet, if I didn't know anything about the Muslim world or anything, some explanation would be useful in that respect. But in terms of your question, whether it's okay to be to kind of deceive the audience, maybe, I think the answer is it depends. And it depends how you're deceiving the audience. You know, at a certain point, you're not writing science fiction, and I don't think that'd be your intent. A lot of science fiction says, well, what if reality was the same, but this one little thing was different? How would that change our world? So, but that doesn't seem like what you're doing. It's saying, like, this is reality. This is what could be in 5 years, in 10 years. But if you start making up technology, or if you're not sure that the technology can actually do what you're pretending it can do, then you're really doing a disservice to your audience.
Could I take it?
I'm not sure if you answer this or not. I just like to make a brief comment. Is this like audible? Okay, sorry. It's a very, very brief comment. So what I think is very cool, like in this whole media art thing, is that you like take out the art out of the galleries and into the public spaces. Like for example, with this Berlin thing, with this U-Bahn, and like I'm often at the Alexanderplatz here in the U-Bahn station, like the U2. And there's always this art in public space, and I think that's really cool because of like everybody can experience it, and you have a few spare minutes and can experience the art, and yeah, that's just
I think,
a brief comment.
I think it's one of the strengths of new media art, at least of some piece. If you take children to a museum, they will just look at paintings; they might like it. But I'm always amazed, like when I go to some media art festivals and I see people coming with their children, and children, some of the thing they saw they don't like, but many, very often I see them having fun and wanting to interact. I have the feeling that because of that interaction part, new media art is a strength that traditional art doesn't have, that like people have the feeling that they can touch it and contribute. They feel more involved.
Yeah, and it's very cool.
Maybe. Okay, I guess we're kind of out of town, are we?
No, not really.
No?
But yes.
One more.
Okay.
One more comment.
We have to give 5 minutes.
I'd like to thank you and say, from my point of view, this hacker perspective is somewhat sharing tools. And the nice thing about the tool is to use the tool. As long as you're just sharing your ideas, From my perspective, it's nice if you get the idea communicated and people get the point. If it's actually usable, that's not the point, because it's not a tool. You're communicating, and that's the important part of it. Communicating the existence of a tool without having access is causing envy and not joy. As long as I'm not wanting to obtain your artwork, I like to hear about it, and it's okay. If I hear about a tool, I like to obtain it, I like to use it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. What I think is special about new media art is that it's a form of art that is critical with the work with the stuff it works with, and at the same time, the stuff it works with, the materials are the same as the materials hackers have. So that's the basic link about it. And then a new media art has the strength to communicate the problems and the criticism with technology. In a way that hackers mostly don't have, I think that's a connection, or that's a strength where media art can enhance the political views and the issues hackers have with certain technological aspects, or that gives us or gives the community other possibilities. I think that could actually be enhanced some more as well. So. We'll work together.
Thanks very much.
That's it.
Thank you very much.